If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
All right, so unfortunately, these teen takeovers, the street takeovers, have continued, where I guess we should define this if people don't know, and they probably do, what we're talking about, where groups of 100, sometimes 200 or more teenagers come down to the same place in your ward, but happening, aldermen, all over the city. I saw one in Lincoln Park where it was a street takeover, and the cars do donuts, I guess they call it, and then someone lights gasoline. And this is on Cannon Drive near the zoo, of all places.
Yeah, the scars are still there on the pavement.
Literally.
From the kerosene that they used for the accelerant.
Yeah. And what are the police to do? Now, sometimes they get a heads up now using social media that they know it's going to happen. But you said we need more tools in our toolbox. You or the media called it a snap curfew, where Police Superintendent Larry Snelling and all of his district commanders would have an opportunity to say, with Garion Gatewood, who's the deputy mayor, or someone else that he says it's okay if you say it, that, okay, now we have a curfew. Right now, we're going to do it. Did I describe that right, first of all? And secondly, most of your colleagues say this is a good idea.
Yeah, actually, I've got 32 co-sponsors for this ordinance out of 50 aldermen, so that's a pretty strong coalition. And by the way, we're from all walks of life within the city
council. It's all over the city.
You get 32 aldermen on the same page for anything, and by definition, you've got a pretty diverse group on board. So I do have that right now, so we've got the votes to pass this. We're just trying to finalize some of the details, but your description's accurate. I don't know who came up with the phrase snap curfew. You know, there's the implication that it's spontaneous, which there's some validity to that because some of these takeover events are, in fact, spontaneous. With today's ability to use social media to organize something in the blink of an eye, you know, if you're a 15, 16-year-old, you got a group of friends that you're an influencer, they follow you on social media, and you decide to put something out there, meet me downtown in an hour, you can do that. And they'll show up, hundreds, you know, sometimes more. So we have to be flexible as well, and we have to have the ability to respond quickly to these events when they happen. That was the purpose of this curfew. It gives the superintendent the opportunity to declare a curfew in place for a given piece of geography in a given period of time based on the knowledge that an event is being planned for that area.
Now, one of the arguments is it's just kids having fun. But you will point out to me now that these events are generally not benign.
No, they absolutely are not benign. And I just want to push back on this idea that, you know, we're trying to keep kids from coming downtown. And we are absolutely not trying to keep kids from coming downtown.
And it's not only downtown also.
Well, you're exactly right. In fact, we successfully stopped a teen takeover from happening a couple of weeks ago in the downtown area. And one spontaneously popped up an hour later in Hyde Park. We think, we can't prove it, but we think it was the same group of kids that were intending to come down to Streeterville and have this activity in front of the AMC theaters, which has been the focal point recently. When we met them with police and with youth counseling workers, outreach workers, officials from the public schools who recognized them by sight, when they got off the red line and they saw that, they went, you know what, let's not do this here. And then an hour later, one popped up in Hyde Park. So, you know, I can assume, and I think it's a reasonable assumption, that certain numbers of the kids who were the leaders got on social media, got on apps like WeChat, where we can't monitor. You know, it's private communication. We don't have the ability to monitor private communication, whether you're 15 or any age. And they said, let's go somewhere else. So to try and keep up with them is a real challenge because they have that flexibility. We need to match it with flexibility of our own.
All right. And I want to again strike this point. It is not benign necessarily. They are lighting cars on fires in some cases. They are doing the donut thing that I described by blocking off intersections. They have lit. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Where kerosene or gasoline is on fire in the intersection. People have gotten hurt, seriously hurt. There's been gunfire. And on occasion, stores are broken into, by the way, that happen to be nearby.
Yeah, the worst one that we had this year so far, there have been two teen takeover events in Streeterville this year so far. The worst one involved gunfire, 14-year-old shot a 15-year-old. It didn't involve any car donuts, though, like you're describing, but it involved quite a bit of retail theft. The 7-Elevens in Streeterville got absolutely sacked. There were a lot of fights, twerking and, you know, blocking traffic, jumping on CTA buses. All of that is a part of these events. I do want to draw a distinction between the events that tend to be dominated by teenagers, and we're talking about, you know, 13, 14, 15-year-olds are the dominant age group, versus the car-driven events where it's older. You know, it's people in their 20s in some cases that are doing the car sideshows, they call them. So they're really two different events. The curfew is designed to go more after the teenagers. The curfew only applies to unaccompanied minors 17 years old or younger. And the average age in those car takeovers is, I would guess, it's probably in the mid-20s. The average age for the street takeovers, it's 14 or 15.
All right, so here is what the mayor said. He said that criminalizing young people, because he's opposed to this, though, as you point out, most of the aldermen are for it. Criminalizing young people by sweeping them off the streets will not serve as a deterrent to so-called teen takeovers. And that is not only investing in young people. Only investing in young people will do that. I don't even quite understand, and you can't speak for the mayor. But the other argument is somehow what you are suggesting is unconstitutional. Can you explain?
Sure. Yeah, I'll take that first. We had a number of lawyers that have been involved in this because we knew, you know, if you go too far with something like this in today's world, you wind up in front of a judge with having to defend, you know, your attempt to enforce the law. But Chicago actually is one of the cities right now at the forefront of constitutional policing. We're operating under a consent decree. We have a federal oversight monitor. We just went through the DNC, and the legacy of the 68 convention and everything that happened there loomed large over the planning for that. And there was a lot of time and effort with quite a variety of lawyers involved in it to make sure everything we do in terms of crowd control, not only is constitutional, but protects the rights of people to exercise their First Amendment free speech and all of that, and makes it so if you want to challenge us, anybody can sue us as a city, they do all the time, you have no chance. You're going to waste your money. We're going to win. So this ordinance was drafted with that in mind. It is absolutely rock solid. We're on constitutional grounds, and we know it. There was a recent case in Wisconsin where a group like the one that's saber-rattling right now in Chicago, Challenge took it all the way to the appellate court. They spent millions of dollars that they had to raise to pay the lawyers, and they lost. The constitutionality of the curfew was upheld by a three-judge appellate panel. So we're ready for that if they want to do that. But we know that we're not criminalizing youth. It's the behavior that we're talking about. Nobody can defend the wisdom of having unaccompanied 15-year-olds taking over the streets, robbing from the stores, shooting guns, fighting, blocking traffic, engaging in all sorts of mayhem. That is simply indefensible. And nothing in the Constitution says you have the right to do that. And that's the behavior that we're targeting.
Alderman, your colleague, Alderman Lamont Robinson, agreed with listeners, as well as myself, who say, well, at some point in time, why can't we hold the parents or the adults who are responsible for those minors responsible, at least in part, for their actions, because then we would perhaps see less action.
Yeah, that comes up quite a bit in this discussion, and I think there's a place for that. What we're talking about right now is much simpler than bringing parents into some kind of enforcement mechanism, and certainly it has to be a part of the larger strategy here. You know, you look at what happened recently with the Highland Park shooter. You know, we just went through the conclusion of that trial. But before the shooter himself was prosecuted, his family was prosecuted. There is precedent for this sort of thing where young people who engage in abhorrent criminal behavior, you look at the environment that they came from, you look at who might have been an authority figure in their life that enabled it. Parental accountability absolutely has to be a part of this conversation. But again, going back to the constitutionality of this particular curfew ordinance, we wanted to keep it simple. We wanted to make it impervious to a challenge. So we left that out of it for now. And that's something we'll talk about a little bit further down the road.
And we will talk further down the road when we come back from commercials about what the mayor is saying about all this. We haven't really addressed that. He says he will veto, or at least that's the hint that he's given. And on a different topic, the mayor just got back from a road trip to Springfield. Was that successful or not? One TV station in town said if something isn't done, it's doomsday. Doomsday for the CTA. We'll hear your reactions to all of that when we come back. Steve Dale back with you on WGN. Second Ward Alderman Brian Hopkins is here, and we are talking about the street takeovers and the difference between the street takeovers and the teen takeovers. And the street takeovers, you say, when they drive in donuts and they disrupt everything. Intersections have to be closed because they close them, essentially. They start fires. They ransack cars. They do other things. They're young adults, but they're still adults by definition. Last time there was one, as far as I know, it was in Lincoln Park. It was going back, you know, the reference that I'm making, a month or two, perhaps, and there were like two arrests. Why aren't there more arrests?
These vehicles, by definition, are extremely fast.
Can't
That's
they
why
be
they're
in, can,
oh, they I'm, absolutely I'm, can be impounded, but
yeah.
You got to catch them in order to do that. And the drivers, you know, obviously they think they have, you know, stuntman type of driving skill. I would argue they don't, because you see people getting hit when they form these circles. So they're not as skilled as they think they are, but they certainly do have some high-powered machines that they're operating in a very unsafe manner. And from a law enforcement perspective, it is extraordinarily challenging to break up these events once they start. There's a lot of money involved. These groups that organize them have private security that they hire. They pay people to have, you know, to be there with guns, and they give prize money to, you know, the person who does the most extreme stunts. So they're very well organized, and they're very dangerous. And to have police try to intervene while one is in progress, it puts the officers at a very high risk. And we just have to keep officer safety in mind in all we do. So there were a few arrests, the one that happened in Lincoln Park. But by and large, there were a lot more people who got away with it, who fled the scene once police showed up on the scene. We have an ordinance that allows us to sort of go back in time and look at license plates, both of vehicles that were participating in the event and after they fled the scene. And if we can identify the individual vehicles, we can go after them wherever they are. We find out a lot of them actually are from the suburbs. They drive in from the suburbs to participate in these events in the city. And then we work with the state's attorney's office to try and locate them and engage in some post-event enforcement.
You mentioned something that I think is important to understand, and that's they're not all from the city. In either case, the street takeovers or the teen takeovers, a lot of them are from the suburbs. Lots of text here saying this, or the essence of this. I'll use this one text as an example of many others. Tired of Mayor Johnson making excuses for bad, criminal, dangerous teen behavior. I grew up in the city. We raised our four children in the city, and we never would have allowed anything like this. That's what I'm seeing over and hearing, over and over and over. What's the mayor missing? I don't think that you would argue giving alternative things for kids to do is a bad idea. Sure, but that doesn't ever excuse them for doing what is criminal behavior.
No, it doesn't. In fact, my argument to the mayor has been everything he's asked for so far in terms of youth intervention, programming, addressing the root causes, all of those things that he throws out there as an excuse to not enforcing the law, we're actually on board with. I have not said no to a single program that he suggested that the kids on the South Side and the West Side want, whether it's, you know, midnight basketball, whatever it is, all those types of things that we're doing now. We have doubled down, we have tripled down, and I'm on board with that. But it's not an either-or proposition. I need the mayor and the people he represents to be on board with these ideas that law enforcement needs when the events actually happen. You can't stop a riot with a job fair. It doesn't work. You need law enforcement. You need an immediate response. We need to break these things up. In fact, the curfew is designed to end these takeover events earlier than they would otherwise. We just had one last month in Streeterville, and I was out there in it. I was embedded with the police. It started at about 7 p.m. Nothing the police did until 10 p.m. was effective at stopping it. At 10 p.m., they announced we're enforcing the curfew. They moved into the crowd, which was clearly, you could just tell, they were all young teenagers. When they made the announcement over the PA systems, we're now enforcing the curfew, within minutes, the crowds dispersed, the event was over. It worked. So that is a tactic that we need. And to say we can't have that tactic because we didn't start the youth job program soon enough is just, it's a ridiculous argument. It doesn't make sense. We need both, and they're equally important.
Do you think that right now the mayor is sort of forcing Superintendent Snelling to put one hand behind his back, so to speak, and that he is not given the full opportunity to do what he and the officers could and should do to protect citizens?
Yeah, in some ways. You know, the mayor and the superintendent have a great relationship as two men who know each other well, not just as a mayor and as a superintendent of police. But, you know, they talk often, and they don't agree on everything, you know, and they have room in their relationship for that kind of disagreement.
That's good.
That is good. And, yeah. And the superintendent has been fully supportive of my efforts to pass this curfew law, while the mayor has not been, and he's been opposed. So, you know, there's kind of an agree to disagree vibe to this whole thing. But my point to the aldermen that signed on to this legislation, even though I have a number of aldermen that are loyal to the mayor, and yet they signed on to this legislation, it wasn't because I convinced them. It was because Superintendent Snelling said, I need this tool. Give me this tool. I'll use it fairly. I'll use it effectively. I'll use it constitutionally. And it will help. So we're not going to say no to a police superintendent who, by all accounts, is doing an outstanding job, and he knows what he needs. So we should give it to him.
All right. So what's the next step?
The next step is to pass it out of committee. And we're going to do that soon. I'd like to get it done before the city council meeting at the end of May. So I still have another week. I've got a hearing tomorrow, but we won't have a quorum for that hearing because it conflicts with something else. So I will reschedule tomorrow's hearing. And the minute that I can get my committee in the room at the same time, which is a little bit like herding cats, we're going to do that, and we're going to pass this because I do have the votes right now.
All right. So it'll pass committee. Then what happens?
And then it'll pass the full council. And you mentioned the threat of a mayoral veto. He hasn't said the V word yet.
He's hinted.
But he's hinted. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen because there's a couple of aldermen who are not currently signed on as co-sponsors of this legislation, but they would enjoy overriding a mayoral veto. And if he vetoes this, they will jump on this just for the sake of
really, of
a rare mayoral veto over, which is rare, by the way. It's very rare that,
that
a mayoral veto.
Quarters?
Yeah, 34 votes. Right.
Okay.
So it's extraordinarily rare in city council history. And I think in this case, if he does that, that would happen.
All right. As predicted, we only have 2 minutes left
Sure.
here. The CTA. Is it doomsday, like one TV station said, if Springfield doesn't come up with money?
Yeah, you know, doomsday is a loaded phrase that it gets abused, I would argue, you know, to try and scare people into doing something or supporting something. But, you know, every once in a while, the boy who cries wolf, the wolf actually shows up and eats a lamb. And that's the case here. It truly is as bad as it's being portrayed. We're at least $1 billion short in annual operating across the RTA system, the three service boards. And the money has to come from Springfield. You know, there's just no question about that. If we don't get this, you're looking at minimum 30% service reductions across the board through Metra and the CTA and PACE. Could be as high as 40%. And that's a downward spiral. Once you start making those types of schedule reductions, people just give up on public transportation. It's already inconvenient, and it becomes much more inconvenient, and people seek alternatives. We
I would
can't
argue
let that,
that
happen.
The crime will get worse as well if that happens.
Yeah, the crime will get worse. So we saw that in the first couple of years of the pandemic in 2020, 2021, where it was a ghost town on the trains.
Right.
So people felt unsafe. It was creepy to
it
be
was
alone,
unsafe,
you know,
at times.
And then the criminals were still riding. You know, criminals didn't stop riding. People with jobs stopped riding. So you had a higher proportion of violators to law-abiding people, and it just created a very ill at ease kind of environment. And we'll go back to that if we allow this to happen. So the governor's involved in it now. He can't let this happen on his watch, whether he has larger aspirations or not for a different office. Can't comment on that. But either way, he is not going to let public transportation in northeastern Illinois collapse on his watch. So he's got to get involved. And I'm hearing from Springfield he already is.
Hope you're right about that, because we clearly need the CTA. So many people depend on it. And right now, it's being undependable, even though people depend on it. That's at its best. So if what happens the way you describe were to happen, Chicago, I'd argue, would be in big trouble.